Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Todd, I tried to read your text before we started here. Yes or no on Neil at the moment?
No at the moment.
No at the moment. Really? All right. Well, we'll get to him in un momento. So, no problem. The 5.7 model is a model that is the best at the moment for college football. I would have gone 4.8, but you want to give the group of five an opportunity. Okay, I got it. But again, it's does it open the door? And since it does open the door, one thing I'd like to point out is that every year the lowest rated game is the game that involves a group of five. The Oregon Liberty game was the Fiesta Bowl was the lowest rated of all of them. Again, brands mean everything in all this. Brands mean everything. And when you have the big brands in there, is it any surprise Alabama plays Michigan and it's a knockout? It just means something. Cincinnati's in there. And it's great Cincinnati made it, but it's not as interesting. It's the same thing happens in basketball all the time. It is always great the opening weekend when you get upsets. Fairleigh Dickinson beats Purdue and others that happen along the way. But you'll notice every weekend, every year, when you get to the second weekend, people are not sitting there going, oh boy, I hope Fairleigh Dickinson does it again. They don't. They're like, oh, please. Like, St. Peter's ran to the Elite Eight, but as much as CBS would like to promote it along with TBS, they'd be dreading the fact, in reality, of St. Peter's made it. Not a knock on St. Peter's, it's just it's just a fact of life. Cinderella only has so much of a shelf life. And so often, the suit has referred to himself as a Cinderella story, and that really, tells my story. What?
Maybe at the beginning, I think he's a number one seed just because he's entrenched in his job now. No.
I think that in his own mind, he is a number one seed. I believe that there are enough people around him that have convinced him that he may be in the play-in game. Maybe.
We'll say it's in the 12 seeded game, but not the 16 seeded game.
Oh no, he's in the 16 seeded game. No, he's the Southland Conference. Did you see the brawl that erupted last night?
I did. The video I saw, you couldn't see exactly what triggered it, but I saw.
No, I saw the rest of it. Same thing. Incarnate Word and Texas A&M Commerce. Now, there is no way on the planet that we're talking about Incarnate Word in basketball or Texas A&M Commerce unless we're talking about one of them making their way to Dayton, okay? But they're in the handshake line. And all of a sudden, you look to your left, and did you hear the commentary on it?
Actually, no, I was watching it at work, so I didn't have the sound on.
Oh, no, the commentary on it? I think, I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess that these are student announcers, just based on how they sound. But it was unbelievable. Here we go. Brawl erupts. Let's see if we can. I mean, the brawl part. It got ugly. A little girl got hurt. One of the managers had blood on his face. I mean, it was really, and it was just the handshake line. It was a 76-72 win for Texas A&M Commerce last night.
Hey, I have Neil on the line, Steve.
Okay. Two, three,
well, listen
ten.
To this first.
And with, oh no, this is not good. This is really not good. We've got punches being thrown. This is really bad. Oh, my goodness.
Ooh, full team fight. Coaches in the middle of it. Wouldn't be surprised. Someone got a nick on the face there.
This is not what you want to see after
that close of a game.
It has been a great game. We've got everything going on right now.
What cracked me up was the band kept playing.
We still have guys running after people.
It's kind of like the Titanic.
Oh, my
Someone
goodness.
In the crowd was hurt and hit.
I mean, it's still carrying over. Now they've gone to the baseline.
Like,
you know, coaches are trying to separate them. I mean, it's
ugly.
We
got a manager that has blood on his face, and we still got guys that need to get to the locker room.
Everyone's still rallying here.
We need to get this settled. We finally have gotten some people to the locker room. So what was such a great game just ended in a way no one wants to see.
76-72 was the final. Texas A&M Commerce ended up with the victory and a third-round TKO. All right, so let's bring in Neil Kulong, sir. Always a pleasure.
Pleasure is mine, as always. I was not involved in a basketball fight last night, but I have covered events like that. It's interesting.
It's different when it happens. And I think, again, I thought those were a couple of student announcers working it, and they did the best they could. I mean, what's the last thing you expect? Is something like that. All right.
I was thinking slap shot, you know. If peanut vendors are standing up to them, if I wasn't up here, I'd be standing up to them.
You know where they film that? Johnstown.
Johnstown, right?
Yep, Johnstown. Yep, Jack Ham's hometown. Yep, the War Memorial.
Know what I'm watching tonight.
Yeah. The movie is actually really good.
It's
really good. In fact, what? Since you're in Minnesota, the Carlsons or the Hansons? Hansons, right? They're the Hansons.
Hanson brothers. Carlson in real life.
In reality, they're the Carlson brothers, and they played in the WHA with the Minnesota Fighting Saints.
Yep. Yep, they talk about it often. They come by for autograph sessions, and everybody around here has probably seen him at least once. But the stories of that league, it's not to totally derail the conversation, but it's in my opinion, it's probably the best all around sports movie ever made, mostly because no other sports movie is as authentic as that. When you hear the stories, it's obvious that their research was done entirely on making what happened out on the ice and off the ice applicable in real-life events. Like, all of it happened. And it's obviously done with a sense of fantasy involved, but it was like that.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
And they got Paul Newman to be in it. Pretty good.
Genius.
Yeah. This is one of your fun times of the year because it's the off season. So let's start with the Steelers. And if you had to put together a laundry list in free agency to then set up the draft, what would your list look like?
You know, the real uninteresting thing is that it's so scarily similar to last year. You know, they through no fault of their own, and despite their very best efforts, they're still walking into the season with a question at inside linebacker. And, Landon Roberts goes down, that's unfortunate. Cole Holcomb goes down, that's unfortunate. They had problems at that position every which way they could have this year, and it would eventually hurt them down the stretch. They're going to need to find another one of those. I would imagine it's a priority come draft time, but, you're not sure. I haven't heard an update on Holcomb's injury. I'm not sure where he is with that process, but that wasn't a pretty injury. You know, he didn't tear his hamstring or anything. That was pretty bad. You hope he's able to come back because he was really starting to fit in. He was really starting to get it and playing good football. They did a great job patching together what they had, but you need the bodies. You know, I think that's a position they need to address probably twice. Both free agency and the draft, depending on what they want to do, how much they want to spend on it. But it's got to be a sore point at this point. It's been an obvious weakness for several years now. They've been hexed ever since Ryan Shazier went down. They've not been able to fill that position consistently or with outstanding quality. So to me, I think that's something they still need to do. They're going to have to address their cornerback room again. Joey Porter played very well, I felt, overall throughout the season with some growing pains in there. I don't think he was quite the all-around dominant player that he's made out to be by many, but he played very well, a lot to like for a young player, but they're not done there. They're going to need to, you've got a decision to make with Patrick Peterson. You've got, a much easier decision to make with Levi Wallace. Shannon Sullivan is he your guy long term? They're gonna have to bring in some more bodies. That's not unusual for them. Safety, I think you saw real problems when DeMonte Casey went down. That's a position you're gonna want to look at. It's tough to do that when you've got Minka Fitzpatrick making the money that he's making and being the player that he is. But Keanu Neal is not an answer. They can't have Keanu Neal playing snaps. Pro Bowl selection Miles Killebrew is not supposed to be playing safety. He's supposed to be blocking punts. You don't want him in on playoff games. They're probably going to need some depth. That's another one, free agency and or the draft. I'm focusing almost entirely on defense, but you've got probably even more holes offensively. The one position, two of them I would say that are really pretty set for them, running back and tight end. They've done a good job identifying talent, keeping talent in those spots, but you probably need a starting center. I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of their first two draft picks, but they might go the veteran route there again. People won't like this, but I would imagine Dan Moore is the guy they want at left tackle next season. If they can do better at his price, which, believe it or not, is kind of hard to do, maybe they make a move there, but I think they're probably set. A new center, some interior depth is definitely going to help. But overall, the biggest question mark I think that they have is their direction at wide receiver. What are they going to do with Deontay Johnson? He's got a very unique contract. It was signed deliberately to kind of set up a pretty tough decision in 24. I don't know how tradable he is, but when you have a guy with a base salary of $7 million and a salary cap number of 15.8, he's completely upside down, and that's very tradable. It's just not very, awe-inspiring for Johnson. So if a team does trade for him, which I would, you know, I'm not going to say that that's likely, but that's absolutely an option. It's very attractive from a current contract perspective. What's his extension going to look like? That's what he's going to be asking. Who wants him and then wants to extend him? That's the question. And I believe they signed his contract to be exactly that. But how happy is he going to be playing for $7 million this year? I'm not sure he's going to be thrilled, but with a better quarterback, with better quarterback play, we saw more out of Johnson last year. But as you know, Steve, the one game we're not going to forget about is Cincinnati, when right. he was kind of bothered to notice that there was a live ball rolling right past him and never moved for it. I don't know how that doesn't infuriate a coaching staff, an ownership group, a team, to the point where we just don't want this guy here anymore. You know, win or lose, we want guys that are going to come in here and play hard. Can they find a veteran at his level of production for what he's making? No. His contract is so strange, it's not going to buy them a whole lot to cut him or trade him. Unless you're bringing that back in assets, but then you're looking at a really young receiver room again. Allen Robinson's contract was never meant to be played into at this point. There's no doubt that's going to be restructured if he's not just flat out cut. I would lean toward him probably coming back, but you're missing a couple bodies in there. So that's another position I think they're going to need to address. And they need to get a guy that can play. You know, your quarterback position is probably not going to improve a whole lot. From what we saw last season, just call it a hunch. But you are going to need to bring in better playmakers, guys that can do a bit more outside of George Pickens with kind of an inconsistent run of games. Hopefully you can get more out of him in year three. I expect that they can, but they're still going to need somebody else to be more of a target eater outside the number, or I should say outside the hashes. Get that Z receiver that can play off of motion, that can be set up and make guys miss in the open field. I'm not sure if they can improve beyond Johnson in that regard, but I'm not sure that Johnson is the guy that you want in your huddle either.
All right, now the part you didn't bring up, which is not, it's not going to be on their radar, but I want to bring it up anyway. At the end of year two, Kansas City knew that Patrick Mahomes was their guy. At the end of year two, the Bills knew it was Josh Allen. At the end of year two, the Cowboys knew it was Dak Prescott. You know, I can go on and on and on here with guys. At the end of year two, the 49ers know it's Brock Purdy. Right? At the end of year two, what is your opinion on whether Kenny Pickett is the answer?
If you're asking the question today, it can't change. If we're locking it in place today, I'd say no. I mean, I don't know how you could answer otherwise. He is young in that sense, but he started a lot of NFL games. He's been around a lot of NFL games. The list of people that you just rattled off were the answer after 2 years, largely because they played at an elite level. You can't put the word elite anywhere near Kenny Pickett right now. So if that's the question that you're asking right now, I would say no. The secondary or follow-up question, though, that you have to ask is what can you do about it?
Right, and that is the question, because to me he has played more like a journeyman quarterback to this point and not an NFL like consistent starting quarterback.
Yeah, you can't – think of it like this. They don't have to, and I know they're not going to, but – they're not, I don't think they even can, actually. If they were eligible to sign him to an extension, would they? No. I mean, there's no way. That's your answer. So if he's not your, if you aren't sure if he is your guy, he's not your guy. That's the way I look at it. But
yes.
While everyone's clamoring for Justin Fields, I don't understand how Justin Fields is the answer either. If you're going to trade out one guy of similar production for one that, you know, can run the ball a little bit better, but otherwise has similar gaffe of vision, of judgment. I don't know what you're gaining from that, especially when you're giving up assets for it anyway. I think, honestly, the Steelers are going to kick the can because they can at this point.
Yes.
They don't really need to make a decision on Pickett now. He's the cheapest option that they've worked with. It's a new offensive coordinator that I'm pretty sure that the conversation of the quarterback came up when they were interviewing him. I would hope he has something of a plan, or they're going to go in a completely different direction that we don't know about right now. I don't think Arthur Smith was hired because the only way he was going to coach is if they traded for Justin Fields. I simply don't think that's going to happen. That said, really, it's Rudolph versus Pickett. And if you want to look at recent production, I think Rudolph has, you know, a little bit of an edge, to put it mildly. But Rudolph is now going to carry a price tag that the Steelers are not in a great position to pay, especially considering Rudolph, presumably his agent isn't stupid, and he's going to go into the negotiation saying, my guy beat out your top two quarterbacks last year.
Right.
You're going to pay me more than the backup got, which was a lot, and you're going to put it at a number that's going to ensure my guy is going to play, because the other guy that you benched him for is still there, and he's cheap.
Yeah.
So if that's still an option in your mind, I'm going to go somewhere else. If you want me to play here, if you want him to play here, he's your starter. This is our price. The Steelers can't really get into that. Not for Mason Rudolph. I mean, you know, being better than Kenny Pickett doesn't really ensure you NFL legacy. You probably need to have done a little bit more than what you did in three games. In other words, just out of, you know, it's unfair to characterize it like this, but circumstantially, Rudolph is worth more to the Steelers, or he should be, than he will be to anybody else.
And that's
right. Solely because they didn't play him.
Right.
So his agent is perfectly fine going to negotiate in what's the hottest market for backup quarterbacks the game has ever seen.
Yep.
He's perfectly fine going and talking to one of 22 other teams about his client services, as opposed to trying to deal with this phantom debate between himself and Kenny Pickett, which Pickett absolutely wins because of pedigree and because of contract. So unless they pay a premium for Mason Rudolph, which we would have laughed about saying a year ago, unless they're going to pay a premium for him, he's not staying in Pittsburgh. So Pickett's your guy just by logic. That's the way that I see it, but I've deduced things logically the last couple of years with Pittsburgh, and none of it has really come out the way that I thought that it would. It's a different time in Pittsburgh. We'll see what they do, but you know, for me, the easy money is Kenny Pickett, their guy next year.
Well, that's okay, because you're probably actually right in the end. Neil, thanks so much, my friend. Appreciate you. Always, always great. You're the best.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong. Todd Zielecki in the next half hour. Of course, during the interview, the suit was texting me. Trying to work here.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best new inventory, all with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. And at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Okay. Todd Zielecki joins us. Todd, first of all, it's always great to talk baseball, no matter any time of the year. We're going to talk some now. First of all, the key is, how have you been?
Oh, I've been good. I've been good. I got down here last Tuesday, and today, or yesterday, I should say, was the first full squad workout. So they're in full swing right now, and on Saturday there will be Grapefruit League baseball.
And that's great, because it's about time we get rolling again. With all, first of all, how warm is it there?
Well, it's all relative, of course. It's probably in the 60s today. It's not your typical Florida day. The last few days have been a little rainy. I think it's going to start warming up in the next few days. Again, no complaints. The sun is out. I'm not wearing a jacket. You know, there's no threat of snow, anything like that. So it's great. It's great.
All right. Is there anybody that is going to be slow out of the gate because they're either rehabbing something or they're not quite ready to go yet?
Nobody really of note. Everybody is healthy. Nobody is behind schedule. You know, so there's not really that nagging injury type of situation. You know, which is obviously great news, especially on the pitching side. You know, Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Ranger Suarez, Taiwan Walker, and Christopher Sanchez. That's going to be your starting five. Your five man rotation. All of them are healthy. Everybody that's competing, it's either a lock for the bullpen or is competing for a bullpen job, is healthy. And of course, your starting nine in the lineup are all healthy. And that's a big reason why I think the Phillies believe that they will, for the first time in a long time, get off to a hot start and, maybe, try to take down the Braves in the National League East.
All right. Is there any spot that you look at on the 26-man roster when it's all said and done that would be competitive spots? Would there be three, four competitive spots, two, five? What would it be?
I think there's three. I think there's three jobs up for grabs. And, yes, I would say three, right? So you talk about the bench. Garrett Stubbs is going to be the backup catcher. Edmundo Sosa is out of options. So right now I would say I'd be very, very surprised if he does not make the team. And then, of course, you have Whit Merrifield, who they just signed to the one-year, $8 million deal. He's going to be the super utility player. He's going to play some left field. He's going to play some second base. He could play some third base, first base, possibly center field, possibly some shortstop if needed. So that basically leaves one bench job. And right now I think the favorite for that would probably be Jake Cave. You know, he hits left-handed. Yeah. I think they want a left-handed bat off the bench. They would like that. But, you know, you have other guys in camp. You know, you have Christian Pache. You have Derek Hall. You know, you have Wes Wilson that could possibly compete for that bench shot. But I think Jake Cave is probably the favorite at this point. And then, the other jobs up for grab, there's probably two bullpen jobs. One of them is going to be a long man. So you're talking about Dylan Covey, Connor Brogdon, Nick Nelson, somebody like that, and then one other bullpen job, some sort of one inning, two inning guy, and again that could be Brogdon, that could be Covey, that could be Nick Nelson, some of those guys in camp that could compete for that spot.
The Whit Merrifield signing was, I thought, a great signing for Philadelphia. I mean, yeah, this guy is a veteran, been around the block, has been an all-star, has led the league in a couple of categories, including stolen bases. He could have been a starting second baseman someplace else, yet he chose Philadelphia because he wants to win. How invaluable is that attitude, and what can he mean to a 162-game schedule?
Yeah, I think it's very valuable. I think that he is somebody that they needed in that you want to have some depth there you want to have a veteran presence if you can on the bench, somebody that you feel comfortable putting out there and playing. Say for instance Brandon Marsh gets hurt, now you feel pretty good about who your left fielder is for the foreseeable future. Say if Bryson Stott is really struggling, now you feel like, hey, well, we have a good option against a left-handed pitching to give Bryson Stott a break. I don't think the Phillies are expecting either of that. They want Stott to play almost every day. They want Marsh to play almost every day. But on a team that's trying to win the World Series, you want your depth to be as strong as you possibly can, because injuries always injuries happen. Another example, say Johan Rojas really struggles this season, they go, you know what, we have to send him back down to AAA. Now you send him down to AAA, now you move Brandon Marshall over to center field, and now, you feel pretty good about who's your left fielder and Whit Merrifield. So I think that makes the team a lot better. Bryce Harper had an interesting quote the other day. He said, I don't think he's scared, which will be really good for us. I asked Whit what he thought Bryce might have meant by that, and he says, I think it means that I'm ready for the moment. I want that moment. Mm-hmm. I want to be in those big situations, which sounds like something that a guy who's been in the big leagues for 7-8 years would say. I think that experience can be big in some big spots, and who knows if it actually manifests into reality. But I think the Phillies right now, they imagine a big game in September or in October, and they have to go to their bench for some reason, and now they go, wow, thank goodness we have Whit Merrifield to step into the batter's box and maybe win a game for us.
Johan Rojas is, in my opinion, an elite defender. In other words, he's 180 of Kyle Schwarber. All right, but he's an elite defender out there. When you watch him at the plate, what can make him serviceable enough at the plate where his defense can pay off and he doesn't get sent down?
I think for him, it's, try to shorten up his swing a little bit, not chase as much. And I made this point to somebody recently in terms of, what kind of production do you need from Johan Rojas? Certainly he can't hit like he hit in the postseason last year. He was 4-for-43 with, mm-hmm. One walk and 15 strikeouts. He also doesn't need to hit like he hit in the regular season last year. He hit like 300, 771 OPS. Say, for instance, Johan Rojas hits 225 with a 650 OPS. Mm-hmm. By most standards, that's not very good, right? I mean, that's not a very good offensive player. But he is so, so elite defensively that you can live with that. And I go back to 2008. Charlie Manuel had Carlos Ruiz hitting ninth for most of the season, and Carlos Ruiz barely hit 200 that year. He might have hit like 215. Right. And reporters were constantly asking Charlie Manuel, Charlie, how much longer can you keep going with Carlos Ruiz as your nine-hole hitter? And finally, Charlie said, listen, if we're relying on our nine-hole hitter to win the World Series, then we've got no chance anyway, because the other eight guys in the lineup should be able to produce enough that we can survive with Carlos Ruiz. And I feel the same way about Johan Rojas. They have eight other guys in that lineup that should be able to produce enough where you can get by with a, below average offensive player in Johan Rojas, if indeed that is what he is.
When you talk to the pitching staff, what do they think of Rojas, and what does he mean to them as a pitching staff?
He means everything to them. They love him. They love him in center field. But more than anything, they love Rojas in center field and Brandon Marsh in left field. And those two in the outfield are so good defensively.
Yep.
I think you could see a big, I shouldn't say a big drop in ERA, but I think you could see a lower ERAs from guys like Zach Wheeler. I can tell you, Zach Wheeler's ERA would have really benefited last year from having Marsh in left and Rojas in center field for an entire year. There are a lot of games where I saw a lot of balls fall on the left field down the line and in the gap that simply would not have fallen for hits. Will not fall for hits this season. Those two guys are so, so good defensively.
Okay, I've always used this as an example, but when the Yankees had Tino Martinez at first base and Mark Teixeira at first base, it covered up a multitude of sins from an infield that included Robinson Cano, Derek Jeter, and Alex Rodriguez. Because the Yankee infield, when they weren't out there, they were good, but not nowhere near being great. But the first baseman made a big difference. What kind of what do you see now from Bryce Harper, who's now going into a full season, really a second season of playing that spot? What kind of first baseman is he? He's not to share, I know that, but
I think he's going to be above average, and it has the potential to be much better than above average. You know, you talk to Philly, Bobby Dickerson, he's the Phillies infield coach, and Bobby is legit one of the best infield coaches in the business, and he thinks that Bryce Harper could win a gold glove one day. And I do know this about Bryce. He would not be playing first base if he didn't think he could do it really, really well. You know, in other words, he knows he's a good, he knows he's an at least an average, sometimes above average right fielder. If he thought he was going to embarrass himself at first base, if he didn't think he could be great at first base, I don't think he would be playing that position. So I think Bryce really believes that he can do it. I think we saw, you know, the last 2 months of the season that Bryce can play a good defensive first base. And again, possibly better than that. Now he's going to have his first full spring of actually working there. He's healthy. He's got experience at that position. And, you know, we just talked about Marsh in left and Rojas in center. The Phillies are also very high on their defense this year because they have Bryce Harper at first base. So they think, and I'm not saying they think all these guys are gold glove winners, but they can close their eyes and they can see JT Realmuto, Bryce Harper, Bryson Stott, Brandon Marsh, Johan Rojas all being nominated as gold glove finalists at the end of the season. Not saying it will happen. Who knows what happens? I'm just saying they look at those guys as gold glove caliber players, and they see a potential bounce back for somebody like Trey Turner as well.
Yeah. Okay, so now let's talk about Harper at the plate. I mean, a year ago, here he is coming off the rotator cuff. I thought what he did at Todd last season was amazing. Amazing. Mm-hmm. What he did just to get back in there and just to swing a bat. How different does he even look right now compared to a year ago, because he is now 14-15 months removed?
Yeah, I think you're going to see that power come back for sure. He had that big power gap, a power drought, I should say, you know, soon after he came back. So I think the power, you're going to see consistent power from him. I think he's excited that he's coming into camp healthy. You know, he hasn't played a full season in a few years because of, you know, he broke his thumb getting hit by a pitch. And, you know, last year, of course, the surgery, off-season Tommy John surgery. So, you know, I think he's excited for just being healthy coming into camp, knowing where he's going to play coming into camp. And so I would expect another big year from him. You know, talk about a guy who has lived up to the hype. You know, or you give a guy $330 million, and yes, he really has delivered on all aspects. You know, and he's got a long way to go.
And he's beloved in the city because he's done exactly that, and he plays the way the city wants to play. This guy is all out every single time. I mean, he's a guy that you want to take a bunch of little leaguers, rack up the video, and say, this is how hard you should play the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with emotion, with intensity, you know, he loves being in that moment. And I just talked earlier about Whit Merrifield. Like, you know, Bryce is the same guy, you know, times a billion. You know, like, he loves to be in a big spot and come through in a big moment. And you know, this is somebody who really loves playing in Philadelphia, and he's backed it up. He's backed it up with his performance.
It's great to talk with you. Enjoy the 60s weather. Okay.
Hopefully it starts warming up soon.
Yeah, I hope so, because I don't need you out there in a jacket. I want you in a golf shirt, comfortable, the whole deal.
Absolutely. Right. I'm looking at the scoreboard right now. It's 66 right now. Yeah. Hopefully you start hitting some 70s soon.
Okay, just so you know, my two basketball road trips for Penn State next week, I've got to go to Iowa City and Minneapolis.
Oh, there you go. I went to the University of Minnesota, so I feel your pain.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much. Really appreciate you. Look forward to the next conversation. Great as always.
All right, take care. Anytime.
All right, we'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Yeah. So let's set up for the final three home games of the season. the three longest trips of the year. Let's go to Nebraska, Iowa, and Minnesota. Who thought this was a good idea? I'm sure there's a good answer somewhere. I don't know. But tomorrow they're in Rec Hall for the first time in 8.5 years. Yeah. And the first time they played a Big Ten game in there in 28 years. When they beat Wisconsin. Penn State was undefeated at the time and in one poll was ranked 25th. And beat Wisconsin, I think it was 79-50, if I recall correctly. I think it was 79-50. And they were, Penn State was undefeated at that point. Starting lineup was Danny Earle, who's now the head coach at Tennessee Chattanooga. Calvin Booth, who's now the general manager of the Denver Nuggets. Pete Lisicki, who played in Italy for a long time. Glenn Secunda played in Europe a long time. And Matt Gaudio is one of those heart and soul guys that every team needs. And, you know what?
I used to cover that team. That was a fun team to cover.
Oh, they were good. I mean, Glenn Robinson and Purdue come in there. And Robinson ended up being the national player of the year. They're ranked 7th in the country. And Gaudio got right in his chest. He says, this, you know, pull that stuff in my place. I'm like, okay.
That game at Rec Hall that year with Glenn Robinson, I don't know if that was that year, but he almost had one of the most spectacular dunks I've ever seen. He had a hold of the rim and tried to put back dunk with the other hand and just missed the dunk.
Yeah, no, it was remarkable. And Penn State won the game that night.
Yes, they did.
So they pulled a lot of upsets in that building over the years.
I do remember Bobby Knight loving to come there.
Gene Cady always had the best lines to me because I'd talk to him before games. He'd say, Steve, there are 14 gyms in Indiana that are bigger than this one. Okay. So then the first time that Purdue played in the Jordan Center, I'm on the floor and I said, Gene, you told me there were 14 gyms in the state of Indiana that were bigger than Rec Hall. What do you think of this place? He goes, more people that hate us, Steve. I really liked Gene. Not a little. I liked Gene a lot. He was great. He was great. I always enjoyed talking to him. Last time I saw him was at a Coaches versus Cancer event. And he was doing really well. So it was great to see. But yeah. Gene Cady. He actually had a football background, not a basketball background. But he sure did win a lot.
Explains how Purdue plays, though.
Yeah, you know what? But it's interesting. And a lot of people don't realize it, Purdue has more Big Ten championships than Indiana does.
You know as well as I do, they've always been pretty darn good.
They've been really, really good. No question. Now the question is, stylistically, how does Purdue do in the tournament? Stylistically does become a problem, and what amplifies the problem is the officiating in the NCAA tournament, I think, sometimes dictates what Purdue can and cannot do. And that's an issue. And that's going to be an issue somewhat with the way Houston plays. I give Houston a lot of credit. All new opponents in the Big 12, they're in first place.